Welcome to the Work Reset Revolution. And today I have as a guest Rachel Hodgdon. And Rachel is President and CEO at the International Well Building Institute. Rachel, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be connecting with you today.
It's so wonderful to have you with us today. And as most of our listeners already know, I would like to kick off by asking you the first question in terms of, in your opinion, what do you think the biggest challenges that workplaces are facing today?
I love this question. I feel that I could answer it in so many different ways. Let me offer up a couple of the top challenges that we're observing with our own clients and community. I think that a lot of businesses are without a roadmap to address workplace challenges that we've always been contending with, like performance, productivity, collaboration, and burnout. But particularly, I think that businesses that have shifted for the first time to a hybrid or fully remote paradigm are very much without that roadmap. We know that from a well-being perspective, your physical environment and your social environment, so where you sit and who you sit next to, are the two greatest factors that can influence health and well-being outcomes. The challenge is that in remote and hybrid organizations, these factors, physical and social environments, they're largely out of the organization's control. These organizations are now being challenged to reimagine what they can influence in terms of home environments. And I think they're also contending with a pretty new question, which is how do work from home realities introduce new obligations the employer now has for supporting their employees' well-being and productivity? Because those things, of course, align directly with business performance. So for organizations on the flip side of that, those that have maintained or mandated a return to office, I think a lot of those organizations have lost as much as they've gained in getting people back to work. But I do not think that those organizations have the data to understand exactly how their workforce is struggling or where the consequences have been and what they can do to address what's ailing them. So regardless of whether you're remote, you're hybrid, you're fully in person, we find generally that the vast majority of organizations we work with are without the insights that they need to understand the experiences of their employees, grasp what their greatest vulnerabilities and risks are as a business, and then how to solve for those things moving forward.
So that's really interesting. So it's really sort of the biggest pain of the organization, right? So how are we identifying that, but how are we identifying that for the employees, right? And of course, so much has shifted in terms of, you know, the hybrid work, as you say. So some people are some days in the office, some people are working from home some days, and it's different for everybody. And so it's how, you know, how do you measure that? How do you look at that? And so I think that leads me on to my next question is, what do you think are the solutions to these challenges that you're seeing?
I mean, that is my job, and the job of the International Well Building Institute is to provide our clients with evidence-based interventions that can help them to solve for these challenges, but also to help them identify the tools and the mechanisms that they can utilize to first understand what are the problems that they're solving for. So I think, first of all, organizations always have to begin by asking their employees about their experience. Ideally, you do that using a third-party survey, like the one that you offer as one of our survey partners. Those surveys need to be implemented anonymously, and employees need to trust that the responses are going to be anonymous, which is one of the reasons why that third-party element is so important. But the other reason is because more sophisticated surveys like yours and others that we've approved to earn points toward WELL ratings and certifications for our customers also are able to digest the results into meaningful insights. So for instance, a lot of the surveys that our customers utilize to satisfy requirements for WELL can slice and dice responses across a workforce. So they can tell you, how are women experiencing the workforce as compared to men? How are millennials thinking that they're performing in terms of their productivity compared to boomers? How psychologically safe are marginalized and underrepresented individuals feeling as compared to those who are not. And there are many solutions for how an employer can positively influence work from home environments. So let's start there. We're seeing more and more of our clients offer subsidies or supplies for ergonomic workstations, and we incentivize that within Well. We're seeing them also think about, you know, making sure that they're providing their employees with high quality audio and visual setups, you know, think headphones, screens. But we're now even starting to see employers with high populations, large populations of employees who are working from home start to support their remote workers with provisions for thermal comfort, for improving air quality, and that these things can have an impact on everything from focus to cognitive function to problem solving. So I think it's also important for businesses to have an understanding of where their employees are feeling their most productive and how that differs for diverse populations or even diverse functions that people are performing in their day-to-day responsibilities. Those insights help us to set people up to do their best work when they're in the office or when they're working from home, and also identify pockets of people within the organization that are underserved, unseen, and therefore likely underperforming. And then shift to think about people who have mandated that return to office. You know, these organizations also need better data on what they've gained and what they've lost, because what employees are now looking for has shifted. So they've got to think about, in light of those mandates, how are they going to continue to recruit and retain the best talent? How do they support people in doing their best work? I think a lot of organizations that have demanded return to office are seeing a flight of talent. They maybe don't have access anymore to the best candidates. So looking at that historical data related to recruitment, retention, employee satisfaction becomes so imperative. Yeah. And then we also know the expectations of those employees have changed. If you want me to be in the office 4 to 5 days a week, I expect that that workplace is inspiring. I demand that that environment is more productive and more conducive to my work than my home, because I've now had the opportunity to experience that alternative. I want daylight. I want, you know, an office that is conducive to collaboration. I want air that's safe to breathe. I want lighting that helps me to stay focused during the day and sleep at night. I want access to public transportation, amenities like the gym, a cafeteria with healthy food options, access to outdoor spaces, like on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so while employers that are many of them don't necessarily need as much square feet per as many square feet per employee, because oftentimes they're not requiring 5 days a week, but maybe mandating a few days a week and staggering people's time in the office, they may not need the same size footprint, but the demands on those spaces are higher. And so, you know, those organizations have to really think about, how do I woo people back to the office and prove to my workforce or those that I'm trying to attract to my workforce that this is a worthwhile place to spend 40 hours a week or more.
That's so interesting. And I you touched on a couple of really interesting things there. So first of all, sort of the, as you were talking about the measurement, you know, that bringing together the objective and the subjective measurements to get an overall picture, as well as the whole intergenerational measurement and getting the right data, because we're seeing a different kind of request coming from, you know, younger employees. And as you say, also this the sort of attracting the talent back to the office. So I would love to, and even the sort of the quality of the air that we're breathing, right? Something that's often forgotten and that people don't think about, but how that can affect our cognition and our way of working. So I think this is all so, so valid. And I think it's going to become, you know, even bigger as we see things. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about what would an sort of average journey be, you know, telling a little bit more about your work at Well. How, what would that sort of look like for an organization that says, okay, well, we want to find out, you know, and just kind of get certified on this and have the test. What would their journey look like?
Well, we've intentionally made that journey flexible. So there are lots of ways to begin that journey and an infinite number of ways to evolve that journey over time. So I'll describe to you maybe a couple of different experiences that we've seen our clients have and different paths we've seen them take. Our initial offering was a Well certification, and that was something that could occur at the level of the individual building. So the way that a lot of our customers got engaged with Well was by simply certifying one of the spaces where they house their employees, or where they have a retail establishment, a call center, a data center, you know, even. That's an interesting opportunity. They often focus on like a flagship location, an HQ. But when I started at IWBI about 7 years ago, one of the biggest undertakings for me as chief product officer back then was to work with our standard development team to build upon the WELL standard that our customers utilize to achieve a WELL certification, but offer up a pathway where an entire organization could enroll and engage and take incremental steps toward achieving WELL designations or simply advancing their people-first related goals for their workplaces. So that program now is called WELL at Scale. And an organization of any size, including many, many Fortune 500, so like some of the largest, most complex companies in the world, enroll at our WELL at Scale program. And from there, the journey is really theirs to define. They might elect to pursue a rating across their entire portfolio of enrolled spaces. And that is like a themed subset of features. We have an equity rating. We have a health and safety rating that came out during the pandemic. We have a performance rating around real-time tracking of health indicators. Or they might choose to get 50 of their buildings certified that are going through major renovations or that are being newly constructed within a concentrated period of time. Some of the organizations that we work with are really just focused on their WELL score, which is an aggregate, you know, weighted sort of average of the improvements that they've made and the interventions that they've implemented across all of their various assets. And so what we were finding was that there wasn't a one size fits all, but what WELL could offer up to any organization at any point in their journey were tailor-made, evidence-backed interventions that were flexible enough for businesses of all shapes, sizes, sectors, all across the world in more than 150 countries, but were very specific and could be, once you understood what it is that ails you, could be matched to those particular needs. So you can choose your own adventure within WELL and select those interventions that you know are going to have the greatest impact on your business's performance and the people who are working within it.
So that's amazing. So thank you for sharing that to give our listeners an idea of how it would work and the different options that there are. And that brings me to our last question. It's a fun question. What does the work reset revolution look like to you? So what would a sort of healthy future business look like? Where would we be going with this?
Well, this is the fun part of the job, right? Because we're very much in the business of market transformation, not in the business of awarding plaques and seals. And so we think a lot about what is that future that we want to see? What does that transformation look like? And we believe that the goal that we're working toward is that all workplaces are people-first places. And for that matter, all of the places where we live our lives and spend our time put people first. So we want to see a future where the places and spaces where we live our lives prioritize our health, our well-being, our productivity, spaces that take care of the people that frequent them through cleaner air, through optimized lighting, community connectivity, active design, supportive family policies, you know, effective workplace well-being offerings and amenities that in turn allow a business to be able to recruit the best talent, support that talent in reaching their full potential and keeping that talent around longer. And ultimately, those are the core conditions for a business's success. In other words, healthy, high-performing people are the key to creating healthy, high-performing organizations. And for organizations that are able to crack that code, you know, it's not the same code for every business, but for those that can crack their own sort of individual codes, they start with excellent insights into how their businesses are currently performing, how their workforce perceives the business to be performing and meeting their needs, and then match those insights on where they're underperforming with those evidence-backed strategies that are fit for purpose. And so we believe that the best solutions for our clients and organizations as a whole sit at the intersection of what the physical environment can do and mm-hmm. what the social environment can do. So that means it's a combination of solutions and interventions related to our physical workplaces and workspaces, whether that's at home or, you know, in a work environment, an office or some other workplace. And then interventions in our organizational programs, practices, policies, and benefits. You can't really yeah. separate those two. They have to work together. And so the beautiful thing is that for those organizations that do crack that code, they're also in turn building out the foundation of their S strategy in ESG. You know, taking yeah. care of the workforce is the foundation of your social sustainability strategy. It begins with your people. It then extends to your supply chain and then to the surrounding community that you impact. And so people often talk about how the S in ESG is elusive. It's hard to define. It's hard to measure. We patently disagree with that. We think that's why the work that people like you are doing, because it's demystifying the S. It's quantifying those elements of performance, productivity, health, well-being, burnout, and then helping organizations to leverage those insights into actionable strategies.
Wow, that's what a fantastic work recent revolution. So I feel really inspired, and it's absolutely great work that you're doing at Well. So thank you so much for coming on this podcast today. It's been a real delight to hear from you, Rachel, and to speak with you. So I know our listeners are going to really enjoy this. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you for listening to the Work Reset Revolution. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. As a next step, share this episode with anyone that you think may benefit. Follow us on LinkedIn at Softer Success for more inspiration to change the way we work, and contact us at info@softersuccess.com to find out more about our burnout assessment tool. If you have any feedback on how to improve, please do reach out to me, as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Work Reset Revolution.